coming. This is last of the scientific sessions. We'll have the closing plenary after this. This session is being sponsored by the Maternal Child Health section of APHA, specifically the data and epidemiology subpart of that. I will be circulating a sign-in sheet because we're trying to get a reasonable head count of how many people are here. Not that I can't count, because it's not how many are here. We'd also like you to consider becoming a member of the APHA MCH section, which you can do either as a primary section or APHA, as of last year, started allowing people to have a secondary section or a second section, which you can join for a small fee of $30. Anyway, the other piece I'd like you to consider, and you can mark it off when you sign up, is to become a reviewer for the abstracts for the 2009 program. I have a particular vested interest in that. I'm the program coordinator next year for maternal child health, so I'm looking for all the reviewers we can get. So pertinent to this session, we're all required to do our disclosures for any conflicts of interest, and I have none. I have no financial relationships to disclose other than the fact that I've been married for 29 years to the same guy. Please, if you haven't muted or turned off your cell phones, if you would do so at this time to avoid other interruptions. How we're going to structure this is the presenters have been given 15 minutes to do their presentation. Since we only have four presentations today, they'll have a few an opportunity for a couple of questions after that, and then there'll be a little bit of time at the end for questions to the larger group. So we'll get started. And Angela Nanani, and I just realized I didn't ask you how you present. Is our first presenter. She is an assistant professor at the School of Nursing at Northeastern and has in the past worked for the Massachusetts Department of Health. She got her nurse practitioner training at Vanderbilt and has a PhD in health policy, which she got at Brandeis.
Thank you, Ian. Good afternoon. My second slide actually has all my co-authors and it's kind of, to do this kind of research, it kind of takes a village, these very complex data set that we work with, but from Northeastern, Mass Department of Public Health, the CDC, and BU School of Public Health. It was funded by, the database was funded by the CDC, and this analysis was funded by the Mass Department of Public Health through HRSA. And also thanks to a colleague at Northeastern, a psychiatric nurse clinical specialist, for helping me with some of the ICD-9 coding. And here's my disclosure. I have no commercial interest here. Okay, so women during pregnancy and postpartum with mental health and substance abuse are definitely a population of interest for departments of public health. You know, a lot of money and time and effort goes in to getting providers to screen for both depression and for substance abuse and all behavioral health issues. And I think some states routinely, they have the PRAM system, which we're going to hear about in a little while, the Pregnancy Risk Assessment and Monitoring System. Now, that's a population-based survey where there are questions that get at depression. If we were going to look at national data, there is our sources of national data that you can look at ICD-9 codes for mental health and substance abuse, such as working with the Healthcare and Utilization Project from ARC or NAMSIS, data sets like that. But there's issues, if you're thinking about pregnant and postpartum women, there's issues with unlinked data sets in that the only way that you can identify women that are pregnant, they have to have a pregnancy ICD-9 as well as, you know, the mental health and substance abuse code. So this may not always happen even during pregnancy, and it's impossible to identify postpartum women if the data is not linked. So the objectives of the project here is to identify pregnant and postpartum women with mental health and substance abuse disorders using linked population data and to present selected findings of interest to that would be of interest to state departments of public health and to discuss benefits and limitations of our methods for state surveillance and program efforts. So first, to create our data set, we start with our the birth certificate or fetal death certificate data, and we link that to the hospital discharge data that is the outcome of the pregnancy. So that's what we call the core linkage. And on the hospital discharge data, there's a unique identifier. So we're able to link in Massachusetts, we have emergency department data, hospital discharge data, and then short stay data, 24-hour data. So because we have a unique identifier, we can link through pregnancy to postpartum. So in that way, we can get we can do women or delivery-based analysis as well as visit encounters. So our study population is almost 170,000 women that had almost 177,000 deliveries. They were all Massachusetts women with a live fetal or live birth or fetal death, and their pregnancy had to begin after September 30th, 01, and the outcome had to occur before October 1, 04. We picked September 30th because that's when the state started collecting emergency department data. So we had full antenatal and 1 year postpartum follow-up on these women. So then that generates 196,000 plus linked hospital visits, plus the almost 177,000 delivery hospitalizations. So you can see we had a lot of visit data. And this is over inpatient observation stay and emergency department. So to identify the mental health and substance abuse data visits, we use the ARC Healthcare and Utilization Project clinical classification software. And this tool identifies the diagnoses using the ICD-9-CM method. So it can be used with any data that you have ICD-9-CM diagnoses. And they actually give you the code for SAS or SPSS or STATA. And I have the website down there. We did our analysis in SAS, but other software works just as well. Okay, so of course, with any tool, you have to look at the codes and decide what you want to use or not, and you can edit your program. For the ARC tool, we excluded ICD-9s for tobacco use because we felt like we could get, if we needed that, could get that through the birth certificate data. And there's also an ICD-9 for screening codes of history of substance abuse, and we were looking at more acute conditions. And ARC does not include the 648.3 and 648.4, which is an ICD-9 that says it's substance drug dependence or mental disorders complicating the pregnancy. And it's supposed to be used with another code, but even if it wasn't used with another code, there were 479 visits that only had this diagnosis. We included this in our cohort of visits. And we also, I think there's 38 categories on the classification tool. So we collapsed some categories. And these are, the ones in yellow are kind of the bigger categories. And then the white is the smaller categories. And as I said before, I think there's 38 categories. So if they were things like, very rare disorders, we put them into miscellaneous mental disorders. But as you can see from all these categories, you can generate a lot of data. So today I'm going to, if you do analysis on all these different subcategories, so today I'm just going to limit it to a few categories, which you'll see. So we examine distributions of mental health and substance abuse visits by percent of deliveries, type of mental health and substance abuse visit, whether it was a primary or secondary diagnosis, and we looked at prenatal and postpartum periods, including at delivery hospitalization. So we looked at rates overall and then looked at specific categories by race, age, insurance at delivery, and level of education. And also, I'll show you adjusted analysis as well. So we did relative risk and then adjusted for that. So we found that almost 7% of deliveries had a mental health or substance abuse diagnosis, and it's 5.5% of mental health, any mental health, and 1.5% of any substance abuse. And these are overlapping categories, of course. We had nearly 10,000 visits per 100,000 live births or fetal deaths that had at least one mental health or substance abuse diagnosis. About 24% of these visits, that mental health and substance abuse was the principal diagnosis, so we're kind of intrigued by that. And 14% of the visits had more than one mental health or diagnosis right on the visit. So just in some of the subcategories, 3.4% had mood disorder, 2.8% had depression, 0.5% bipolar, 2.3% anxiety disorder, 1.5% substance abuse disorder. And there's a typo here. It's supposed to be 1.2% was substance abuse and 0.4% was alcohol. And once again, these are not mutually exclusive categories either. So where did we identify these? Actually, 43% were right at delivery. So it was a comorbidity at delivery. There was only, I don't know, less than 30 that had it as a primary diagnosis at delivery. About 34%, a third, were at the emergency department visit. 17% were inpatient, and the rest were these short visits. 51% of the visits that in pregnancy did not have an ICD-9 code to indicate they were pregnant. So if you're using unlinked data, you wouldn't have found these women. So in terms of dual diagnosis with substance abuse and mental health, because the Department of Public Health is also interested in that cohort, we had 17% of deliveries were to women with both mental health and substance abuse diagnosis. They may not have occurred on the same visit, but they may have had multiple visits. And then 5% was substance abuse only of the deliveries for mental health and substance abuse, and 78% was mental health only. And 22% of the deliveries had two or more visits that were either mental health or substance abuse. So in terms of the timing of when we picked up the mental health and substance abuse diagnoses, 24% was in pregnancy, 43% in delivery, and then 33% postpartum. Now, in all the subcategory analysis, most of the subcategories followed this trend, more or less, except for two notable exceptions, is alcohol and self-inflicted. So you'll see in alcohol, it was postpartum was 53% of the women were identified then, and as you would think, self-inflicted injury at 69% postpartum. So substance abuse, even though alcohol is part of substance abuse, the other substance abuse women, it was only a third postpartum were identified. So it's definitely something about alcohol postpartum. And then, so for race ethnicity, the prevalence was highest, just the strict prevalence for Hispanic and Black non-Hispanic. And of course, you can see the low rate there, 2% of deliveries to Asian Pacific Islanders were mental health substance abuse, so that's low. And the good thing about the birth certificate data, too, if we want to do sub-analysis by ethnicity, because the birth certificate, the women self-identify, you get a richer look. So then we did adjusted models, and you can see with the unadjusted, it's Hispanic and Black non-Hispanic are significantly different than the reference group white. But when we adjusted for age, education, insurer, marital status, tobacco use, and one or more deliveries, the differences go away. I also want to just caution about taking a big category, and this is just an example, like mental health and substance abuse. So if you're looking in ethnic groups within these subcategories, you'll see difference. And so here is Hispanic women. 4% of Hispanic women had depression diagnosis. But if you look at bipolar, it's 0.3%, whereas it's twice the rate, bipolar is twice the rate in white non-Hispanic and Black non-Hispanic. And then for substance abuse and alcohol abuse, the Black non-Hispanic is 2.5%. It's almost twice the rate as white non-Hispanic and for substance abuse, and then 0.7% in alcohol abuse. So you really do have to think about disaggregating some of these categories. Okay, for insurance status, it's a little over three times as high for public insurance, 11.6%. of all women had a substance abuse or mental health disorder, so that's very high. But then, and when we have the unadjusted, it's 3.2, and when we adjust, the risk doesn't go away this time. So it's 2.6 times higher and significantly different than private pay. And also another caution here, this is substance abuse. It's like 17 times higher in the substance abuse category for public payer, and alcohol is 10 times higher. So Just in closing, this kind of analysis, I think, will aid the Department of Public Health in surveillance of different types of mental health and substance abuse disorders going beyond depression. And it's important, I think, that they'll follow this over time. We've had epidemics in the state of, substance abuse deaths where new kind of heroin comes into the state and more women are dying. And so we can follow substance abuse morbidity, for instance, using this kind of analysis. It also gives us ability to look at the women with primary diagnosis that might be women with less access to mental health treatment. And the linked data is, I think, particularly important for conditions not tied to pregnancy diagnosis. We also have PRAMs in the state, but this gets at a different population that may not necessarily respond to PRAMs. So the differences in the rates and timings will inform our program efforts, I think. Of course, limitations using any kind of administrative data, it undercounts for sure. There's no ambulatory care data. There was an article published in the Green Journal in May by Bruce et al., and they did a Kaiser HMO, so they had all the utilization, and they found that mental health was in 9% of the population. So we found they didn't look at substance abuse. So, and substance abuse, is hard to find anyhow. So our data was 5.5% of the population had mental health diagnosis. Coding practices across hospitals may differ. And so lastly, you have the limitation. You have to think, what do these higher rates mean in different groups? Are they higher? Do they go to hospitals where there's better coding? Are women with low SES more likely to be labeled? So these are things, you always have to. It's just one study, so you have to think about these limitations. But we feel like it's a good option to monitor mental health and substance abuse disparities in pregnant postpartum women. And over time, used in conjunction with other data sources, I think it can improve our public health programming and surveillance efforts. So, thank you. I also have extra slides if you want to know about them, like my algorithms and things like that. So if you want to, you can email me and I can send you my presentation if you want. But I didn't want to get onto all that technical things. Any questions? Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, you don't know, like even a principal diagnosis, someone can come in crisis, but maybe they had existing diagnosis. The one we excluded the history of depression one, but there weren't that many women coded with that as well. It's administrative data, so I don't think providers are coding like that. It's not like you'd code in a history. So that's the limitation. And we also look for
The whole thing where was there a diagnosis, say, depression in pregnancy and then postpartum, were there a lot? And it really didn't seem to.
Not that many women had, were labeled in both periods. So.
It was 0.17% of women here. You can see there. So if you want, to email me, I can send you this slide. It's kind of a busy slide, but this is all the breakdown of all. So if you're interested, the good thing about this method, if you're interested in, a certain subpopulation, you can look for it like that. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Oh, yes. For this presentation, it's just about a diet. So we looked at all the outcomes. Certainly, we have a lot of different categories. And we also have linked these women to early intervention. So we found out, and actually what was interesting to soundbite is that overall 15% of our And we looked at referral and whether they were enrolled. So sometimes women are over-referred. So 15% of the whole population is referred to early intervention. But actually, say, substance abusing women, it's 40% of their. So it was very interesting that these, you know, providers that knew about these problems, it was around, and depressed women, too, between 30 and 40% of their kids. It was like twice the rate of the overall population were turning up in early intervention. And as you would think with alcohol, like we found outcomes like placental abruption and things, you know, and substance abuse rather. We did find some positive findings, but that's the whole next one.
Yes, we're hoping to have a little bit more time at the end for some questions. And I will be